turn to history and up to the present. While our perception of settlers and pioneers may hearken back to the horse and buggy, there were many people riding those horses and guiding those buggies. Amy Bott is Assistant Professor of Gender and Women's Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. Joins us in our studios. Good to see you.
Good morning.
And Lady Iyer is Professor of English at Seattle University. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Together they have compiled Roots and Reflections, South Asians in the Pacific Northwest. And this is based on an oral history, number of oral histories that that people have compiled that you folks have used to put together a history that probably not a not well-known history of the Northwest, don't you think?
I think that's right. So this book is a collaboration between myself and Nalini, as well as the University of Washington Library's South Asian Oral History Project and the University of Washington Press. And in this collection, we're interested in thinking about how we can use the stories of contemporary immigrants to shed light on older histories of migration, as well as thinking about contemporary debates around immigration more generally. And we start really in the 1890s, thinking about the ways in which South Asian immigrants had started to come to the Pacific Northwest well before some of the later migrations that we see on the East Coast.
Yeah, so we're coming full circle in these conversations from the beginning of the hour today. Define South Asians.
Well, it is a complicated term, and in general we refer to people who come from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, Sri Lanka. So think east of Afghanistan, west of Burma, south of the Himalayas, more or less that would be South Asia.
Yeah, just a little part of the world.
Yeah.
Population. Talk about these guys mm-hmm. in Bellingham. Who were they? How did they end up outside of Bellingham?
At the time, in the early 20th century, India, the whole Indian subcontinent, as everyone knows, was under British rule, and many of these men were agricultural workers from the Punjab region, which is divided today between India and Pakistan, and they came to the Pacific Northwest. Some of them had come as soldiers and such, and gotten familiar with Canada and then migrated back here as a way of looking for work, because conditions in India were bad and agricultural workers were struggling, so many families sent second or third sons abroad to look for work to support them. And so they came to Vancouver, which was, because Canada was also part of the British Empire, easier for them to arrive. And then as opportunities opened up south of the border, they just crossed the border into Washington, Oregon, California, looking for work in the timber mills. So in Bellingham, they actually worked for the lumber mills predominantly.
How long were they there?
Well, not too long, because they started coming in, they were employed, they took lower wages than the white workers, and on Labor Day 1907, there was a huge riot where white workers had given an ultimatum to timber mill owners saying that you have to stop employing people at lower wages, and the mill owners didn't respond to the ultimatum, so the Bellingham workers came together and attacked the Indian, South Asian men who were living in barracks, broke down their homes, beat them up, threw out their belongings, and they had no choice. The police chief stepped in to try and mitigate the situation. They rounded up all the South Asians, some 200 of them, and put them in the basement of the city hall, which was then the jail, for their quote-unquote protection. But even writers of the time thought that that protection might have been also an approach to making sure that the South Asians didn't rise back up to respond in retaliation. The next morning, they were all rounded up. They were asked to pick up their belongings, and they were set on a train, and they headed out of town. They actually went further south, probably towards California and Oregon.
And did we lose track of them?
Of the particular individuals, probably, but as more of the folks started moving south, say down the I-5 corridor practically, some folks went to Astoria, Oregon, where there was, again, timber mill work. And at the time, they also started organizing against both British colonialism as well as racist immigration policies, and formed a political party called the Ghadar Party. Ghadar is in Urdu means revolution, and they rallied against British British authority in India. And this organization, which actually played a pretty big role, a significant role, I would say, both in Asian South Asian immigration here as well as the anti-colonial struggles in India, formed amongst the timber workers in 1913 in Astoria, Oregon, and later as people found work in California, the organization grew really strongly in Stockton.
You know, first of all, the first part of that story, of course, reminds us what happened to the Chinese workers around the same time, and what happened to African-American workers across the history of the region. But that second part, the notion of them organizing here and reaching it all the way back to Canada, through Britain, to British India. Did you know that story before, Amy Bott? Had you known that?
Well, so I'd known about it in certain capacities, and the reason that the Pacific Northwest becomes such an important place in that is because partly of the role of the University of Washington. Here we actually had some of the oldest students coming from South Asia, in addition to the agricultural workers and lumber mill workers as well. And in particular, one figure, Tharak Nath Das, who ends up becoming a real leader of the Ghadar Party. He also published a newspaper called Free Hindustan, in which he collaborated with, interestingly enough, Irish nationalists that were also thinking about trying to figure out ways to create transnational communities to fight against British imperialism in the region at the same time. And so he ends up moving really all around the country, but had started at here with his PhD in political science and ended up completing it, I think, in Columbia, and then having this presence in New York. So you have this kind of interesting moment in the early 20th century here where the South Asian community is really being mobilized through these various factions of the working class, but then also these intellectuals that are coming here.
Yeah. Amy Bott is Assistant Professor of Gender and Women's Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. Nalini Iyer is Professor of English at Seattle University. Together they put together Roots and Reflections, South Asians in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, there is this notion that South Asians in the Pacific Northwest came when Microsoft began. And this book is all about how that's not at all true. You have a picture of our friend Jeff Siddiqui in this book, who used to be a commentator, still writes and calls us in. He's a writer in the area in the 70s. What's your history?
My history. So I grew up in southern India in the city that is now known as Chennai. When I was growing up, it was Madras. I came to graduate school at Purdue around the time I turned 21 for a master's in English, stayed on to get a PhD. And at the time, met a fellow graduate student, Ganesh. We got married. He got a job here in the biotech industry, and I followed, finished up my dissertation, and then got a job at Seattle University and established our lives here. So
did finding this oral history that was being done at the university and working on it, how did it change your perception of this region from when you first came?
I had glimmers of understanding that there had been some early 20th century migration, so forth, which I'd read off footnotes in books, but getting into the advisory board for the oral history project and then beginning on the working on the book project with Amy, we got to delve very deeply into academic publications on South Asian history, on the oral histories, in literature, film, a variety of sources, and I understood how nuanced. So there's a lot of overlap with some aspects of my experience, but there are also lots of differences, and the ways in which people have navigated everyday life. There's a lot of bravery and courage in everyday life of the people, and I think that sort of moved me and motivated me. And
do your roots seem deeper because you know the history in the Northwest?
Yes, definitely. And furthermore, I have two children, and part of what motivated me to work on this project was that children of that generation, they don't know the stories of the people that they're surrounded by, and I think it's very important for that generation, of the second generation, to really not feel that everything is about a land our parents left behind, but they also need to know what's the story of their people in the land that they're growing up in.
What about your own, I guess, story, Amy Bott, because East Coast and West Coast, right?
Yeah, so I actually came to the University of Washington to do my PhD here in the Department of Gender and Women's Studies. And I started actually in a very sort of unglamorous way of being the transcriber of the first round of oral histories as a way to make a little extra money while in graduate school. And then eventually went through a couple of trainings through the MOHAI here in Seattle and became trained as the oral historian for the next phase of the collection of oral histories. So my connection to the project was actually from the inception of the collection here at the University of Washington Libraries.
Trained as the oral historian to help gather the information?
Exactly, yeah. So to actually do the interviews and to help with the recruitment and following up with narrators as they were crafting these stories, which are really stories that they've gifted to be archived at the University of Washington.
There are a lot of stories in this book and a lot of interesting people, and I'm not saying you have the best or the favorite, but among the heroes that you're the people that went through adversity, who stands out for you?
So my personal sort of favorite story is actually that of Dr. Sheila Kode. And I think the reason that I resonate so much with her story is because it in some ways mirrors the experience that my parents had who migrated from India in the 1970s to Philadelphia. I came here to, of course, go to school, but they're still there on the East Coast. But in Dr. Kode's story, she was trained as a medical doctor at great expense and sacrifice of her family in Bombay. And she ended up coming here after marriage, only to find that her qualifications and credentials didn't transfer, and spent several years actually trying to navigate the system of credentialing to be able to start practicing eventually in the United States. And in that time period, she also started a family here and was also supporting her family still back in India. So working part-time in obesity clinics and running clinical trials when she had been sort of trained obstetrician and general practitioner in India. Eventually, she did this sort of rather unusual step and joined the United States Army as a physician. And she did this when she was 8 months pregnant with her second child.
What year was this?
This was in 1979.
Uh-huh.
And so she ended up joining the Army and recruited herself and ended up going through basic training and still actually works today in Fort Lewis as an Army physician. And what I love about her story is that she, in some ways, experienced downward class mobility when she came to the United States, which was similar for my parents who had been engineers in India and then came to the U.S. and had a hard time finding work in the same kind of industries that they had experienced there. And eventually they became small business owners and Dr. Kode kind of went this other route. But to me, it shows the ways in which immigration is not actually a clear path towards upward mobility and that it takes a lot of work, actually, yeah, to situate yourself here.
Yeah, a lot of work. That's Amy Bott. You have less time. Do you have a person who sticks out for you?
It's hard to pick, but I think I love the story of Raj Joshi. Raj and his wife, Irene Joshi, who was the former South Asia librarian at the University of Washington, they started the Oral History Project by donating money to the libraries to record the stories of those people who had come after World War II to the U.S., but before 1965 immigration laws. And not only the work that he and his wife did in the community, but the stories that Raj tells, the photographs, the manuscripts he translated and loaned us, all of this, he's such a fascinating figure with a remarkable history. You know, middle of his life, he quit and went to the Peace Corps for a couple of years and came back. The kinds of racism he struggled with in city work, working as an urban planner in the city, all of those elements of the story, and not only the courage, but also the joy with which he can look back on that history and share those stories with us, I think that was a remarkable one.
Yeah, I'm also struck by just the connections. We are also connected to each other through our families, but also through our histories. Professor Amy Bott and Professor Nalini Iyer put together Roots and Reflections, wrote Roots and Reflections, South Asians in the Pacific Northwest. I appreciate you both talking to us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
It's a weekday.